Welcome to the Zephyr Hills Alliance Church Podcast, where two pastors process the context of church and the practice of discipleship. Today on the podcast, we welcome Ross and Ashley, international workers with the Christian Missionary Alliance. Ross and Ashley serve in France. Our conversation explores how they were first called to missions, how they chose France, and some of the ways they're hoping God will show up through their work. Thank you for joining us. This is episode 29 of the Zach Pod. Well, today we're excited. We have Ross and Ashley on the podcast. They're Alliance workers in Paris. They've been there 4 years, and they've been at our church for a couple days sharing, and we thought we would have them on the podcast to talk a little bit more about their ministry and their lives. So welcome, you guys. Thank you for...
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
I thought to start, if the both of you could share like your initial call to missions. So we know the story of how you met, although people listening to the podcast maybe haven't heard it. All right, well, that'll just be a little teaser. They have a great story of how they met.
Yeah, they met, they fell in love, and God moved them to Paris.
Yeah.
Quick version from Pastor Ted.
That's the quick version. Yeah, but just maybe both of you could share your initial like interest in missions and how did God move you to eventually, you know, go to Paris?
So my first home church was also a very missions-minded denomination, and we would have traveling missionaries that would come and speak. There was one couple that had shared, and they were from Bangladesh, and I still remember this lady's story of a Bible passage that just really inspired her. And so I had a pretty good notion going to college. I had an idea that I wanted to be a missionary. I just didn't know where or how. And so I thought, because I really enjoyed the sciences, I thought I would be a medical missionary. And so I go to college with that intent. I had a dental hygienist that had shared testimonies how she would take short-term trips and provide dental care overseas. And so she had really kind of confirmed that you can totally do this. This is valid. And so I went off to college with that in mind. Well, my grades weren't quite good enough to continue into medical school. And so I said, okay, how can I still go? And so I chose a more traditional route. So I was a philosophy and religion major. And so my intent was to kind of do typical church planting as maybe an ordained minister. And so what helped and what really propelled me in this direction is also once I got to college, I started taking short-term trips to very different places in the world. And so I went to China, I went to the Philippines, and I went to Ethiopia. And in each of these, doing a different project, and the intent was to find out, okay, where's my heart on the field? Where am I going? And is this a valid option? Is this really what I want to do? And so I went, and all of the trips were great. I learned a lot of things. I saw poverty face to face, and it just kind of rocked my world. And I was like, yeah, this is a valid cause. This is something worth dedicating your life to. And so I had a really bad trip, the final one to Ethiopia. My mother had passed away. I was going through a breakup, and I was just like kind of wrestling with the team lead. And I was like, do I really want to do this with my life? But I came back and I couldn't put the call aside. I was like, I don't see myself doing anything other than being a missionary overseas. Lastly, one other big impetus for me is when I went on my first trip overseas, we were in very rural Philippines. One of the things that the team leads had organized was that we would read testimonies of other missionaries. And so they had compiled a little booklet of all these stories of famous missionaries. And I read these and I was mesmerized. And I was like, I want to follow in their footsteps. Like, these guys are heroes to me. So heroic qualities and traits speak volumes to me. And it were very moving. And so I read these stories and said, yeah, this is what I want to do.
Awesome. Were all those trips coordinated through your school?
So they were coordinated through various campus ministries. Okay. And so the first one, I went with the International Mission Board through Southern Baptist Churches. And so that was to the Philippines for 2 months. And I got to do some medical things. I even got to perform surgeries. So that was really incredible. And I really enjoyed that. And so I was like, yeah, I could be a doctor. I could totally see myself doing this.
Yeah.
And then the other one was the second trip to China was also with the International Mission Board. And then the final one was actually with Pioneers, which is how I heard about Pioneers and met Ashley. So.
And how about you, Ashley? What's your story for getting interested in missions?
The first church I ever went to in middle school was a Christian Missionary Alliance church. And fortunately, it was a church where missions like genuinely was just baked into the DNA, I think. And so seeing all the flags, and I had actually already had experience overseas because my mom was in the military. And so we were stationed in Germany for 6 years. And so I think even before becoming a Christian, like, I just wanted to get back overseas. I think overseas felt like home. I think that whether I was going to end up being a translator for the UN or whatever job it was going to be, I think international cultures and cross-cultural living was just always on my radar. But then we moved to Florida and get involved with the church, and we started going on mission trips with the youth group. And this was just to, like, we went to Alabama after Katrina had hit, and it was more like service projects, helping paint homes and just developing relationships in the community. And I think I also saw that side of it. Like, I just loved volunteering. I loved helping people. I don't know. It was just this like beautiful space, and I just wanted to keep doing that. And so, and then some of the trips were international. Like, our church took a trip to the Bahamas to partner with a church, an Alliance church down there. We went to Haiti. And then we also, I went with a lady that led a trip to Belgium and did that a couple years. And that was much more of like in the European context. And so I think kind of like Ross, it's just little by little, like going on these short-term trips, just like kind of asking God, like, is this something that you're calling me to? There's kind of two big moments. I think one was we were in the Bahamas, and as any wise teenager would do, I did the, okay, I'm going to flip my Bible open to a random page and like, Lord, speak to me through the random Bible verse that I'm going to point to. And while I don't promote that as a regular method of seeking calling from the Lord, I think that he met me where I was when I was like 14 or 15 and decided to do this. And so I'll never forget, but it was a passage in Isaiah that says, like, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me. And it's the same passage that Jesus quoted. And it's talking about, you know, bringing healing to the brokenhearted. And this is the day of salvation. And just, I just thought it was really cool. And so I kind of, in my brain, I think I like marked that and put a little like pin in that. And it was really cool because I think it's extra confirmation. I actually just found a like a journal or something, I think, and went back and looked at it. And on that same trip, that Sunday morning in the Sunday service in this Bahamian church, they sang the same song that I was listening to on the radio when I was saved. Mm. And so like this whole trip like was just really meaningful for me, I think, in my step and my call to missions. And at Life 2007, they did a call to missions and I went down and responded to it. And I think at the time I thought, I really want to please God and I want to make sure that every day that I'm doing something that like makes him happy and pleases him. And so like the easiest way to do that is like to be a missionary, right? Like that will just make sure that I'm checking the box every day. And I think again, in your like teenage mind, you know, looking back, like obviously there's a million other ways to please God and there's a million other career paths. And like, you don't have to go into vocational ministry to make sure that you're doing something that is along with the heartbeat of the Lord every day. But I think the call was still genuine, but I think that was just, again, one of the things he was like kind of using me to get to that point. Mm. And then in college, I went overseas really just as part of my study abroad. It had nothing to do with church ministry or anything. And there was a small church plant there that belonged to the Alliance. And it was just this tiny international church plant. And I loved it. And it was like, they would do international student ministry. You'd have people from like 13 to 20 different countries there on any given night. I think that really solidified it. And I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. Like, that was probably the final nail in the coffin, if you will, in being like, okay, I see, like, now I'm kind of like living abroad. I'm like working with a small church plant. And I just love these encounters. And I love working with these people.
What country was
it? It was in England. Hmm. And so it was in Manchester. And Manchester has three major metropolitan universities, which means that you have just not only students galore, but international students galore. And so this church was just really well situated and placed to meet people at these crossroads where they're out of their country for a little while. They may come from countries that are never, I don't want to say never, but rarely have access to the gospel. It's just really a neat time and place to be there. And so I actually, again, like with Ross, I wasn't there with Pioneers, but I was trying to get back to Manchester after this experience, after I graduated from college. That's kind of how I ended up at this Pioneers orientation, is I knew Pioneers was sending people to Manchester and I just wanted to get back. I wanted to work with this church plant. That's where Ross and I met. And then we kind of teamed up and we did not end up in Manchester or anywhere else that we thought we had planned. But I ended up back in Europe after having lived there. And looking back, it's really neat to see how the Lord like led us to Paris. And I think it's a really good fit, and we're excited to be there.
About that, where were you hoping to go? What were the plans that didn't happen? And then how did you settle on?
So as Ashley has already alluded to, she had 6 years of growing up in Germany. And so we told the Alliance when we signed on that we would like to be in Europe and we wanted to work with Europeans. And so we thought about Germany and we considered that. And we had a connection in our home church of a couple that was currently serving in Berlin. And so we went and visited them two times. Though their ministry was great and we enjoyed them a lot, that wasn't necessarily the people that we wanted to work with. And so they said, well, how about you meet our teammates who are working with the people you want to work with? And so we met this couple and continued to kind of communicate with them while they were on the field. And so it was looking like we were going to go or potentially going to Berlin, Germany. Long story short, that didn't work out. There was multiple opportunities, though, where that came back onto the table. And we were really struggling to decide, are we going to do this? Or are we going to go elsewhere? And then it was the Alliance National Office that had pitched this idea, well, would you consider Paris, France? Because the job descriptions were very similar. And they were bearing in mind the local ministry that we were a part of and our experience. And so we said, sure, we'll consider that. And so both jobs became available to us, both positions, if you will, and we couldn't make a decision. We didn't know what to do. We had some very wise advice given to us from our local missions mobilizers in the Alliance, and they said, why don't you just let the national office decide? God has ordained them in this role to make these educated decisions. So that's what we did. We said, we'll let you all decide. And they said, well, let us continue with Paris, France. And so Paris, France was chosen. We went and visited our teammates shortly before COVID happened. We stayed with them for a week and toured the city and got to see what their ministry was like. And we walked away thinking, yeah, we could totally see ourselves here. And so one thing led to another. We had our various interviews after that. The team confirmed that they would like for us to come join them. And so away we went.
You guys did your Almi was like 3 years that you're doing together. So is this happening during that time? Is this post that time or before? Like when? Where does it fall?
Kind of at the tail end, I guess. Okay. So it was actually funny. Our church didn't have an Almi, and we had like been candidating elsewhere. And our pastor actually kind of found out about it through like a recommendation form that had been sent to him. And he's like, what is this I hear about? You guys are going to this other church. And we're like, well, we didn't think there was anything here. He's like, well, there's not, but I'll find something. And so he goes and he talks to the elders. And within like 48 hours, he's like, all right, we got something. It was just really like, he was so passionate about like wanting to like raise up people from within his church and like send them out and just have this like extension of the family. And I thought that was so beautiful. And it was great to get to do our Almi there. And so we did. It's hard to know really how long it was because COVID has like completely warped any sense of time we had.
And you're already at that church.
And we were already at that church. Yeah.
And that's where you are now. Currently.
And that's where we're back at now.
One question I have is, what is Almi, in case anybody's listening to it? And then the second question is, how important was the local church in helping you get to where you are?
Yeah, I think that so Almi stands for Alliance Licensed Ministry Experience. And typically, you have to do at least 2 years of an Almi before getting sent out to the field. We were doing like bivocational, so they had hired us on to work with the kind of like college and career age group. And then we were kind of running this thing that wasn't really like officially a ministry, but we had like a Monday night game night that we were doing. And that was really just like a safe space to like build relationships with people in our community. We were like surrounded by a lot of young people. Ross was working at a local cafe and there were just a lot of young people there. And so we'd invite them over for Monday night game nights. Like even our local Publix, we were always there. And, you know, slowly we kind of like built relationships with those people and then they invited their friends. And so that I wouldn't say that that was actually part of our Almi, but that was really influential in when we did start talking to the national office and they were like, what is God showing you in this moment? What kind of ministries are you doing? And we're like, I had recently read a book and I was like, hospitality ministry. Like we just see this as such a not just viable, but really just beautiful thing because we feel like that's what Jesus did and like opening our homes and like inviting people into those spaces and just living life with them and walking alongside them. And so I think if it weren't for our Almi and if it weren't for that time in that house and being bivocational, like, I don't know that we ever would have started that up. I mean, it's not something we really ever like looked to go starting. Like, it just kind of happened naturally. We wanted to spend time with people, but that's really what the national office was asking us in those moments. And I think that was influential in them proposing Paris as an option. And somebody had told us, like, working at a, so we actually wanted to do our Almi overseas, because we had heard, like, through Envision, sometimes you can do your Almi overseas. And we're like, well, yeah, we just want to get overseas as fast as possible. But somebody in the national office at the placement, in the placement office, was like, you know what? You guys already know that you're called to missions. You don't need to go overseas to figure if you're called to cross-cultural ministry. She's like, I think it would be really valuable for you to be in a church for your Almi. And somebody else was also saying that you get to see from the church perspective. So, like, obviously when missionaries come back, and whether you're on furlough or whether you're just touring and interacting with churches, so often, like, you don't know how the pastors feel about you coming through. You don't know how the congregation, like,
that's right.
It's the other perspective.
Yeah, let me tell you how we feel.
Yeah, right.
Right. I'm just kidding.
No, and so working in
here
a church
come again,
with right. the pastoral staff,
yeah,
like, you
great.
Actually get insight into, you're not only seeing from the, like, missionary perspective, but you're also seeing from the church staff
sure,
perspective.
And, absolutely.
And I think it gives you, it also just built relationships. Ross loved meeting with the pastors for, like, prayer once a week. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to have you both. You know, from our side, we always look forward to our annual missionary conference and to build new relationships. And you guys visited us before you went, and now you went. And now you're back, and so we're thrilled to catch up, and it's been wonderful.
What's something that's, like, something you really enjoy about the culture in Paris as you've gotten to be there and live there, and, like, something that's, that you really value about that cross-cultural thing?
The first thing that comes to mind, I think, so a big one is, like, the work-life balance. I think that they, American culture is very much, we're defined often by our career, what we do. It's the first question that you ask people. Mm. And, you know, people work crazy hours, and I don't know, I just feel like a lot of our culture is built around work, but I feel like they're still just, like, enjoying life and enjoying sitting at a table with your friends and spending time with your family. It's just, you know, going on vacations. Like, I don't, there's so many Americans that are like, oh, I didn't use all my vacation time, or I can't take time away from work. And it's just this culture that we've built. Whereas there, like, they take every minute of their vacation time because that's what they value and prioritize. And, like, life is meant to be lived and enjoyed. And I think that that's just something that I think here in our culture that maybe we could use a little bit more of, that of realizing that, like, we're not so defined just by the means by which we get a paycheck. And I also really appreciate, it's actually a really, it's a hard thing when you come in as a foreigner, but I think in certain respects, it makes it more meaningful, is that typically French people have, like, five, like, imagine, like, your hand, like, the number of fingers on your hand, like, they have that many really close friends. And a lot of times it's people that they've known since elementary school, maybe their cousins, like, just close family friends. And so coming in as a foreigner, it's actually really hard to break in sometimes to friendships and communities because people already have their close friends. And so there's kind of, like, no vacancy per se. You obviously do meet people that, like, get really excited by foreigners and international and tourists, and so they're a little bit more open. But because of this, when you do finally kind of reach a level of friendship with somebody, like, your family, and your family, like, for life. And so we know of our teammates have this guy, and I mean, we know that he considers them like his family in France. Like, he's also a foreigner. And then this past term while we were there, like, we went through some hard stuff, and one of our friends was like, Ashley, like, we just want you to know, like, we are your French family. Like, if you need anything, like, we're here for you. And I know that when people say that in a French context, like, they mean it. Like, it's not here, you know, you're standing at the grocery store and you within 5 minutes are talking about your Aunt Susie and, like, they know half your life story, but then, like, you move on and you never talk about it again. So in America, I feel like there's a more of a breadth in friendship, but less depth maybe. Whereas they're like, they don't have 100 friends, but the friends that they do have, like, those are close friendships and their family, and they really mean something. And so when somebody says something like, we miss you, we love you, like, those words carry a lot more weight. And I think that's something I appreciate about the culture.
So I'll piggyback off those points because I think both lead into what I enjoy. Is that because work is clearly defined and we don't kind of color outside of those lines, that means the people have more time to do what they enjoy doing, which works really well for our ministry model, because that means I get more time with them to play board games or video games or to do the things they enjoy. And they really push hobbies. I feel like they become this a big part of who you are. And so, as Ashley has stated elsewhere, typically people invest in one or two hobbies and they spend a lot of time and money doing that. And so board gaming works really, really well. And I don't just do it as an excuse. I really enjoy doing it. And so I can go over and spend upwards of 6 hours a day hanging out with someone playing board games throughout the day. Not only is that fun, but it's great quality time with those individuals, and they're seeing you in many different lights, if you will, different facets of my personality. And so, yeah, and then I play online board video games, so I get to do that as well. I do play online board games also. And so, yeah, it just really affords a lot of quality time with these people. And I think they value quality time a bit more than we do. And so that leads also to this greater strength in friendships and relationships. And I really feel valued by my friends, and I feel like I can depend on them. They can depend on me. And I think we'll spend a lot of time together.
That's cool. About the neighborhood clubs situation you guys mentioned.
Yeah, so associations are a big deal. Basically, if you can imagine like a college like activities fair, that's what France has, but like for each community. So we're in the 15th arrondissement of Paris, like the 15th neighborhood. There's 20 of them. And every year they have like an activities fair, basically like a forum. And so you go and there's tables set up and it's like, here's the music group. Here's the group that recycles stuff into art. Here's the group that plays hearts on the weekends. You know, it was like anything you could ever imagine. I decided like this would just be a great way to meet people in the community, like in the neighborhood specifically. And so I went and I joined this local chorus. And so we sing like pop rock music from the 80s and 90s. Some of it's more contemporary. And we're singing in French and in English. I'm kind of like the token American because I just showed up one day and they're kind of like, I actually missed the activities fair. So I kind of found them online, like just found where they meet and all this stuff. So it probably looked a little bit like weird. And they're like, how did you find us? But by the end, I'd been there for 2.5 years before we came back to the States for this year. One of the guys that was in the chorus literally lived in the building across from us. Like he was like, if we were 17 on the street, he was like 16. And then another lady lived just, you know, a couple hundred feet down on the same street. And another lady lived on a corner that's between us and where we meet for the practices. And so we would all kind of like walk together and we'd pick up people as we go. And it's great. We do like we practice once a week on Wednesdays. And then in the spring we have concerts. And so sometimes they're like out in a park. Sometimes they're at like a little chapel. And yeah, you get to like meet people in the community. And it's just really neat. Sometimes we go and just do fun things together, like karaoke, because obviously all of us like to sing. And so we just go and hang out or have dinner afterwards. Our neighbor, like he plays badminton every Monday. Like that's his thing. And so people just find other groups of people that like doing the same thing. And it's like kind of like you're in college all over again. You have your extracurricular activities, but we're all adults. I really think America should do more of this because like I feel like we're all just in our houses and we get in our cars and we go to work and then we go back to our houses. But like granted, Paris is a very walkable city. But I think throughout France, you just have this culture of like, let me go do what I love with other people.
Yeah, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I know. Sure. Yeah, pickleball is big. Yeah. So a lot of folks have jumped in on pickleball, and you know, our administrator, he's big on pickleball.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's great how you do that. Build relationships.
What are some places where you feel like you need the Lord to show up in your ministry? You could share something specific, like, you know, a person that you're praying for in ministry, or just in general, like, where do you feel like if people are praying, you know, for you guys, where do you need consistently God to show up?
So I don't love Paris, and I don't love the culture. They both, for various reasons, grate at me.
Well, what are some of the reasons?
I'm from the South in the United States, and the culture is very hospitable, very warm, very friendly, and very conscientious. And that has not been my typical experience in Paris. Not out of meanness, I think. I think it's just part of living in a big city. You don't have time to worry about everybody around you. And so at times I feel like my interactions can be very shallow, or they can feel a bit brusque, and it just doesn't feel warm. That has been very difficult for me. And the city's darker too. And so, I mean, we live here in Florida when we're in the U.S. And so there's a lot more sunshine. And so you're in a better headspace, I think, than you are there. It's glum and it's gloomy and overcast frequently. And so that affects everybody. You can see how that affects people's disposition towards others, especially in winter. People hole up, I think, and they're kind of more grumpy. Mm. And so I become that way. And I found myself a lot more pessimistic and a lot more negative, I think, having as a result of living there, which was not at all my personality prior to going. And so that was tough for me. I think I don't have any intention of leaving as a result of that, but I think I could have a better quality of life the more that God's there, and he changes me and shapes me more and gives me this resilience, but also gives me something to love about the culture. And I struggled to find that this first term, but I think it's there. I think it just hasn't presented itself yet. And so, as we all know, I think what really makes a place special are the people. And so that I have in spades. I have beautiful people around me. I have my teammates and I have all my wonderful friends that I get to spend time with. And so that's what helps. And I think that's what keeps me going strong. And so God does show up, and I think he'll continue to show up somehow through that avenue.
Mm. Mm, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you can view it this way, and in a very comical sense, that Ross, you are a Southern missionary to Paris. So they just haven't realized yet the Southern charm and the hospitality and all that goodness. And, you know, it's like talking to a brick wall sometimes, you know, right? Because they're very hard and very cold. But through the Lord's grace, you know, he will give you that stamina that you need, and just, you know, and just to breathe in, breathe back, you know, take a breath. Okay, Lord, am I reacting, you know, like Christ, or am I not reacting like Christ, you know, in those moments, and just give it to the Lord? Because it is difficult, you know. My early ministry in some of my years, I was with staff with Northerners, and I'm a Southern boy, even though my parents were Wisconsins, they were transplants. But I was born, raised in the South, you know, in Florida. It takes me, I talk like 50,000 words to get, and they would talk like, why do you do that? You know, why do you do that? You talk so long, and then you get to the point. Just ask us, because they got that New York mentality. Just come right out and hit me with the question. So that's a cultural thing in the United States, as well as probably there's so many different cultures in Paris that you guys have to maneuver with. But building the relationships around the table, the presence, that's a great way. And I think you're right. I do think U.S. needs more of that interaction. If folks here could say, you know, evangelism is not, you know, necessarily giving a tract to somebody or knocking on the door and saying, we're inviting you to church, but it's building that relationship. Hey, have tea or coffee with me, or let's go and play a game of chess or whatever it may be. Go to a concert or go out to eat together to spend time, that fellowship, like you were preaching, you know, rubbing off on each other's shoulders. I think the fragrance of Christ is naturally indwelling his children. And we just have to allow that fragrance to be just come forth and overflow and just fall fresh on all of us, so we can spill, his love can spill out on others. And they are just like amazed. Oh man, that person's different. Why? Well, it's because of Christ in us, the hope of glory. So I know he's both in you, and it's just wonderful to see him shine, see you guys grow. And it's just tremendous. The Apostle Paul, you read his little testimony and the word about how he got beat up and how he got shipwrecked and how he got whipped 39 times, you know, and he's doing all this and he gets up and he's still loving those people and he's still loving Jesus. And that's amazing to me. You know, that was like, well, this is what's going to happen to you when you come to know Jesus. I said, see you later, right? But the Lord's so good, he doesn't do that to us. He just says, okay, just follow me, be faithful in the moment, and I'll give you strength. In our weakness, he is made strong. Man, we need to rely on him. That's great. We love you. I think it's awesome.
As a positive to that, and in conjunction with what you're saying, I think our American mentality is a huge advantage, because I think we come in and we're a lot more optimistic and we're a lot more bubbly. And I do think that people are drawn to that.
Yeah, but then the tricky part is they think we're that way because we're American. And so it's how do we, which part of it is, but I think that then above and beyond that, there's optimism, and then there's like a relentless hope that comes from knowing Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, figuring out how do you articulate and communicate that, or have space long enough for them to realize like, okay, you know, 40 to 50% of this is just American optimism, but then there's something even beyond that. But I love what you said, that kind of word, like fragrance. Like, I think that the reality is like just spending time with people. I think that we love it when you'd asked about kind of just like, how can people pray? And I think it's just that our friends would like be curious or have a holy discontent.
Yes.
Because honestly, I think that something is so much stronger when you kind of come to it yourself, instead of having somebody come along and debate you into it or convince you into it.
Right.
And sure, sometimes like there's space and there's room for that, and maybe a person needs that in that moment. But I think 90% of the time, are we not so much more convinced or convicted of something when we've arrived at that conclusion ourselves? And so if we've experienced it, whether it's the fragrance of Christ through someone or whether it's a personal encounter with God, like those are the people that are like, I'm convinced that Jesus is real because he showed up for me. And so I think that that's like what our friends need. And that's what we want to see happen in their lives. And like, we're just there to like be ready and walk beside them. But like, I don't want to convince anybody into the kingdom, because I think somebody could just walk by and convince them out if it's all really just logical and debate oriented. Yeah. No, but I really appreciated the word fragrance, and we pray that it's just like Christ wooing them through us.
That's
but I mean, I think we have been wooed by Christ. We see how good and how kind and how just much love and affection he has towards us. And so we just want to be vehicles of that for other people.
Yeah. I think that's the beautiful partnership that the Holy Spirit does in us and through us and uses us when the Holy Spirit draws. And as his children, we have to release those who we desperately want them to know Christ. Paul said, man, I would, Lord, you can kick me out of heaven, you know, if you'd save all of Israel, right? But that wasn't God's plan. And so we just have to release and let God do that drawing, that wooing.
Yeah.
And he does. He'll show up. And it's great. And people like you've shared will say, oh, I'm an atheist. And then several years later, they may say, no, I'm an agnostic. And then several years later, you get surprised. They say, I'm a believer. And you like, well, how did that happen? Right? And it was the Holy Spirit.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the ZACPod. All of our content is created in-house by the ZAC Media Team. To learn more about the ministries of our church, follow us on Instagram or Facebook, and subscribe to our newsletter at zaccma.org. If you like what we're doing, please share the podcast with a friend and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.